You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. We have this morning a young entrepreneur, Colton Bollinger from Jumper Media. Welcome. Welcome, Colton.
Hey, thanks for having me, Will. Really excited to be on the show here.
Well, good. So tell us a little bit about what Jumper Media does.
So we're an Instagram-focused digital agency. We help businesses, probably small to medium-sized, tell their stories through social media, primarily Instagram these days.
Well, so how did you get into being an entrepreneur, especially around Instagram? Instagram's not been here that long.
No. I think it all started when I asked Matt for a new bike, and he told me to figure it out. So I went and started selling popsicles on the corner. It was really an accidental business. I feel like everybody says that. But I was working on a different startup. I think it's pretty big in California, but startup weekends, it's like a 52-hour like business plan to go pitch in front of VCs. They do it at most colleges here. Uh-huh. And my entrepreneurship teacher in college gave us extra credit to go to one. And I said, you know what? I went. I was the only person in class who did it, and we won. And that got me into kind of like the startup, mindset of like tech and what we're doing. And then I got involved with a startup in the golf industry and was working on Instagram for that business. And slowly, started figuring out people were offering me to help them with their Instagrams. And I kind of did it as like a side business at first, and that turned into a much bigger opportunity, and ended up focusing on that and kind of nurturing it a little bit, and it turned into what it is.
Wow. So tell me what do you do with Instagram? I mean, do you work with Instagram or do you work with other clients?
So we work with about 3,200 small businesses across the US, and I think we have some clients in other countries too. We're probably in about 19 or 20 different countries, but the majority are in the U.S. And we help post and manage their Instagram pages and help grow their audiences on social media. And then we also run a lot of paid media and like media buying through social media channels. And then we have a whole video agency here, video and photo agency, that we help create the content for social posting and brand stories like that.
Wow. So you really are a one-stop shop for Instagram.
We try to be. I think we do everything but email marketing at this point, but no web development. We stay out of that.
So tell me what clients would find you valuable?
Really, I think we provide the most value to businesses who are looking to get a jump start in the social like awareness stage, right? Where they're coming to market, they may not have a really established social presence yet. Putting that foundation together and really structuring everything to something they can take and run with is where we add a lot of value. And also I think it's just helping to change perspectives of what type of content works the best on social these days, because it has changed a lot over the last few years. And I think that's what we spend a lot of time doing is helping business owners understand what types of content that they can create or have us create that will help put their business in the best light amongst their audience.
So tell me what you would tell a client that comes in and says, I've heard something about Instagram and right. social, and I'm sending my son over there, or maybe my grandson, to right. talk with you. Tell me, help me to understand how I'm going to get value out of this check that I'm going to write you.
Yeah, no, right. It's kind of the first thing I would say is like, yeah, the Instagram is where a lot of people are looking at your business first off now, right? It's kind of their first impression of your business these days, especially with the millennials and people who are making purchases. Depends on what industry you're in. I think for me, it all started in the golf industry. I played college golf. That's some of my first clientele were instructors and things like that, golf courses. And it's not a very technical industry, right? They're like 5 years behind across the board. So it was very interesting having those conversations, because that's exactly the question I got is like, why does Instagram matter? Because it's something that is becoming more and more relevant for today's day and age. And it's easier for people to see and get an idea about your business and see who you are. Mm-hmm. So telling that story on a platform where they're spending their time, and that makes it takes them less time to discover you and understand who you are. That's why it's important. I think my favorite line is, with most people, when they go to the bathroom before and sit there, you know, they were looking at Facebook on their phones, and now it's changed over the last 2 years. They're pulling up Instagram, and that's what you do during your downtime. And so that's where you want to be as a business. And it's never going to be your number one like avenue of sales for most businesses, but it's something that plays as a slice of that pie that's helping people make their decisions and what they want to purchase these days. And Instagram is being a bigger part of that.
So what kind of content would be valuable on Instagram?
It depends on the business, but I think the biggest things I look at are really showcasing your expertise in the industry you're in. So, you know, what makes you different? What helps you differentiate or be an industry leader in what you're doing? And then also showing a lot of social proof, which is customers using your product, the benefits they're seeing from it, you know, potentially like customers talking about it, how it's affected or fitting into their day-to-day lives. Anything along those lines that really ties the brand together with value and showcases, you know, what goes into that perceived value. I think, you know, a lot of the great content that's coming out now with Instagram stories and some other opportunities is showing behind the scenes too, is also showing, you know, if you're talking about Bentley Automotive, right, $300,000 car. Well, I went to their house the other day. They rented out in October for Car Week up in Monterey. And interestingly enough, the whole house and whole layout of that house they rented to showcase their clients wasn't about just the cars. It was about the process that went into every part of the car. It was like a tour around the house, from selecting the leather, how it was upholstered, how it was designed from the sketch. And they took you through that process, not to give you a walkthrough to build your own. They took you through it so you could see the perceived value, why they're charging what they do. Mm-hmm. And that's something that social media is really allowing businesses to do easier and easier, is to show why we're paying the money we are for their products and services.
All right. So as you put your business together, walk us through that. You were being an Instagram assistant for a golf company.
Right.
And you decided to move. Walk us through how you got from there to here.
Yeah. So it was really just, I was doing, you know, obviously I was involved with the other startup that I started with a friend, and we were in the golf industry helping instructors. And I had a few instructors reach out to me. I was using Instagram to connect with them myself for that business. A couple of them reached out, hey, can you help me with my Instagram? I'm looking to, you know, drive some business through that myself. And I said, sure. One of them was a big instructor in Miami at Trump National in Doral. I thought it was a great opportunity to build a relationship. And I think, you know, as any young startup or any like a business, when you start a business, you're kind of scrappy, you're pre-revenue, you're trying to do what you can to build relationships. And that's what I did. And I did it for free for him. The first month, he made $2,000 in lesson sales through Instagram direct messages. And that was an eye-opening experience where I was like, wow, I think, you know, I didn't realize this would, you know, be that beneficial for your business. I could probably start charging for this. If you have anybody who you think would be interested that you're teaching with, who are business owners in Miami, staying at, you know, Trump National, they probably have a business, you know, I would appreciate if you could refer them. And he did just that. In probably about 3 months, I had 12 or 14 clients that he referred over. I charged a variety of prices, you know, anywhere from $50 a month to $500 a month, to see what people would be willing to pay and test that out. And this was still while I was doing the other golf startup primarily. Then I basically, I think like most of us doing a side hustle, it became something I knew I couldn't do alone, and I couldn't do it fast enough. And I came across two of my good friends. One of them worked for Groupon up in SF, and one of them worked for the Giants. Both doing, you know, their own different segments of sales and organization, things I didn't really have. And I think that was a learning experience for me. One of the a difficult ones is you don't know it all, right? You can't do everything yourself. And when they came up to me and kind of said, hey, we're looking to leave our jobs, and I think, you know, we're interested in doing something else, it was a no-brainer for me to bring them on board. And that's when it really changed, because we had different dynamics, different minds thinking about how we scale it. And that's when we started really going full time at it, and thinking about how we could take the clients we had and start figuring out how to replicate the process that we had been doing. And that's how it kind of got rolling for the most part.
So then the three of you were all doing Instagram feeds, creating that, or did you divide up the responsibilities?
Right. So we were all managing the clients ourselves. We built like, I being doing the software thing for 2 years myself earlier, I found some, like, a couple software developers to help build some things to automate some of the outreach and things we were doing internally. Mm-hmm. Just some simple Chrome extensions and things that I knew we could kind of, you know, automate. And from that point, like, I knew if I could close 20 deals a month myself full time, we can hire someone else to do it. How do we set a process up to teach them, and how do we scale that? And that was the thing that I think we put a lot of time and effort into. And then from that point forward, it was about how do we actually do this without having to, you know, come up with the funds and raise money to do it. And you can, I mean, it's hard to hire someone full time and pay them a salary when they're not driving any revenue yet.
Right.
And
right.
We sat around in the living room one day and we were like, well, how could we get more cash to do this? Cause right now, I mean, we're paying the bills and we're, this is working. And I think we all kind of said at the same time, it's like, well, why don't we just charge them for, you know, a few months in advance and give them a discount. Mm-hmm. And it was that question you ask as a business owner. It's like, you know, that's asking a lot of people, mm-hmm. right? We said, you know, let's just try it. I mean, it can't hurt. We figured we'd sell a third as much of stuff and we charge them for 3 months in advance. And we're like, you know what, if we sell one third, 30%, we're happy because it didn't change much, but at least, you know, we have more income and less work. We have more cash flow and we don't have to do as much that month. Mm-hmm. So ended up selling the same amount of deals that month.
Wow.
And we had 3x the cash. And then that was like the aha moment where we could actually hire with the really the expected cash flow that we already got in hand and start scaling a sales team. And that's what led to the kind of faster growth than I think we expected.
And in doing that, what you were able to do was to take the things that you might be good at but don't want to do and delegate them to someone else, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was things that we didn't want to do. I think it was just things that, you know, we literally, like, couldn't do fast enough, if I could put it in a better light. You know, we still did a lot of them. It got to the point where we knew we could do more of it, but if we had more people doing it, we could scale it faster. And now I'm not, you know, now we have a sales team and the customer support and the management team. But yeah, at that point, it was very much just like, we're all still doing it. We just need more people doing it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what you didn't want to do is you didn't want to spend 24 hours a day doing it.
Correct. That's what we were doing at the time. Correct. Right.
So you got to delegate that, and you probably didn't delegate that to somebody who didn't want to do it.
Right.
You got to delegate it to somebody who was good at it and wanted to do it.
Right. And I think, well, I mean, nobody wants to do sales and cold calling 100% of their life, right? So everybody wants to do it for a period of time. And as long as there's opportunism in the future from that learning experience, I think, and keeping that, you know, as we scale now with 50 people, it's like that's what we deal with now is like, how do you create a career and projection for people coming in at the entry-level positions and showing opportunism for them to grow in the company and develop new things.
Well, so where are you going as a company?
Well, we're staying here in California as long as I can see, that's for sure. But it is something that we've been discussing. We're trying to get more into the software side of things and develop our internal products. And basically, we're coming out with a influencer management system here next month that's going to allow us to kind of get a new diversification into something else. But more or less, we just want to be able to help more businesses tell their stories and do more in, you know, a valuable sense of getting more into paid ads, you know, just getting more involved with the businesses we do already work with. And that's, you know, doing more services or things like that. But at this point, the market's so big for social media and there's so many small businesses just in the U.S. that we haven't really hit any tipping point of like a loss of leads or not enough business to take on. It's just for us, how do we refine our processes so that we can scale and not fail, mm-hmm. right? On our, just by our own mistakes. And that's kind of what we're slowing down a little bit right now to figure out, because it's a much different ball game when there's seven people in a room all working together than now you have 50 trying to communicate things.
Right. So
that's been the biggest learning experience for us without ever doing this before.
Well, how? What do you want to get from this business? I mean, here you are doing this. What do you want from it?
Man, that's a good question. Well, I think what we want the most is to be able to grow this thing into a real hub to start other businesses from. And, you know, we have a great digital marketing agency that helps a lot of businesses succeed. And as we're finding out, we're having ideas and learning things from the experiences we're having to overcome here with our clients. Mm-hmm. And that's led us to build our first software product. And it's going to lead to future ones, I'm sure. So having the team in place to be able to launch those ourselves and kind of have other subsidiaries that we can grow and sell or whatever the case is, it's fun. It's kind of evergreen. We're always pumping things out, and having a great young group of people here to work with every day doesn't hurt that idea, you know?
So tell me, how is Instagram different from Facebook and LinkedIn?
It's really, I think they all have their own benefits. Facebook is, it's a friendship platform, right? So, I mean, you connect with people you're supposed to know in real life or have some affiliation with. Instagram is different a little bit dynamically because it has a follower and following relationship. So you can follow someone you look up to, you can follow someone, you know, who you may have never met or know, but it's because they're producing content that you want to like. It's like people tuning into this radio show and listening to it, right? They want to hear the content that you're producing. And then LinkedIn is pretty similar to that. I mean, we're building connections and you're connecting with people on a business standpoint. And LinkedIn actually switched to the following and follower relationship not too long ago. So they're following Instagram in that motion. So I think Instagram and LinkedIn are becoming a little bit more similar in the sense of what the platforms can enable. But LinkedIn is more of just very business focused, I think. And obviously it's not as focused on content and visual content. It's more focused on, you know, a lot of great like blogs, documents, videos that you learn that are impactful or educational. I think LinkedIn's taking a lot from Instagram and learning and applying those content strategies to their own platform, because I mean, I've talked to countless people who are spending more time on LinkedIn than ever lately. Yeah. And they've actually had, for the first time in 5 years, positive growth in their user base this year. So they're doing something positive.
Good. Well, should I have this radio show on Instagram?
I mean, I would definitely be cutting it up into snippets and using that as a platform for sure. Because you can only have a minute long video on there as of now, unless you do Instagram TV, which is a kind of a different platform within Instagram. But yeah, I mean, I would definitely be sharing content there as well and building an audience there. I don't think it'll hurt. Just a different demographic a little bit.
Talk about the demographic.
Definitely, you know, younger than the average user on LinkedIn. Okay, so I think you're going to be catching a lot more entrepreneurs and people who are starting things, in my opinion. You know, I mean, it depends on I think the type of content and who you're targeting. But I think, you know, stuff like this, I would be cutting it up, applying to those millennials and people who are spending their time on Instagram more than LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And you're hitting two different demographics there, because I think it's valuable on LinkedIn. It's valuable on Facebook, but it all helps. You know, I think that's a problem that the social media thing is creating for some businesses, is there's too much stuff to worry about and create content for. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of a burden nowadays. It's like, well, I have to post on this, I have to post on that, I have to think about content for this. It provides opportunity, but it's also kind of a double-edged sword. You know, it's more work for us. But if you can figure out a way to delegate that or make it efficient for yourself, and you have time and you find time to do it, I think it's positively going to impact your business.
Well, great. Colton, you stick around a little bit. I'm going to take a break here and hear a word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Hi, it's time for another tip from Sandler Training. Traditional sales training teaches techniques on how to eliminate stalls and objections. Some are fancy sales moves, while others are programmed responses. Sales is a conversation, and I don't know how you can memorize every possible response for every sales situation. Also, the prospect has usually heard these responses before and has been turned off by some fancy sales move. When you really think about it, the only person qualified to address the stall or objection is the prospect. Ask the right questions and you will eliminate stalls and objections. And that's another tip from Sandler Training, finding power through reinforcement.
Well, welcome back to the Pilgrim on the 405, where we've been having a conversation with Colton Bollinger from Jumper Media. So, Colton, tell me, in your business, you've been how long? Been it 2 years?
Just about 2 years and a month. We've had an office here.
So what are the things that you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, and worry about? I mean, three or four things that you really worry about.
Probably, I would say mostly just right now with software development and how we're kind of moving into that realm a little bit, just kind of, what things am I missing? Are there any bugs that we need to figure out, what's going wrong on that side of things? Also just how are sales going to be? How is the sales team going? What's going on with leads? Right. I mean, I think with any business, if your leads go dry, then that kind of stalls everything else out. So making sure that the leads are there, that's probably the biggest concern over the last year and a half. It's getting less and less because of referrals now that are kind of building up, which is great. And I think that's a good sign. But that was always my biggest, I think, worry waking up at 2 a.m. is like, are the calendars filled for the sales team? Because that's what's driving us as a company to grow.
So how big is your sales team now?
We've got about 10 people on the sales team. Full-time. Yeah. And that's, it's, we have some managers and people in different positions now that are, we got into channel sales a little bit. We're basically just fielding a lot of cold emails, and a lot of inbound people now, which is great. They're just utilizing some other things. We still sell through Instagram ourselves, right? So we DM people. Mm-hmm. We do some email marketing, and then Facebook chatbot is interesting. We get some leads from there. But yeah, the sales team has really been a huge driving force for our company.
Now, you went from 3 people working to 52 now, right?
Right.
So what was that like, making that kind of change?
Well, the health insurance was a big change.
Yeah?
So this year we got health insurance for everybody. That was cool. But it's more than anything, I think it's every day has been a big learning experience for me, because this is really my first real office job, aside from working for my dad through college. And, he was a produce broker. So I did a lot of invoicing, check collector, he bought and sold strawberries every day. So I was talking to a lot of produce people, and it was great. Uh-huh. But working on a team in this environment, it does feel like a lot like college in a sense, where you're working with a lot of people in different dynamics, on different classes. So that's been fun. Again, lessons learned have been really unforgettable here, and being able to go through that with these people. I don't think there's more times in my life where I felt like an idiot, to be honest, and you make mistakes. And a lot of the times it's just being open-minded to, people and their opinions, and knowing you're not the smartest person in the room anymore. That's a better way to put it. But it's definitely a great experience, just learning from everyone around you.
Well, so what are you using for resources to learn how to run a business?
My two co-founders, one of them reads every single day about entrepreneurs and great CEOs and things like that. He got a perfect score on his SAT. He's that kind of guy. Gian, he's really like a savant. I love him. And he brings a lot of ideas to the company of like things that we may be able to emulate or things we can learn from. I'm more of like the, hey, I think this will work or I think this won't work. And I think my dad was like that growing up. I think that's kind of where I got that from. But, it's resources in terms of, how we're running things. I think it's very much just like what's working and what's not. And we learn by failing, and those lessons we take and move on with. It doesn't work all the time. I think there are some times where you can definitely learn more from copycatting other people who have figured it out already. Mm-hmm. And that's, we're a thing. It's a lot of things, just listening to the people around me, those come on the table, and I'm completely open-minded to doing that. Right. I think it's just taking everything as you can and understanding what the best strategy to try out is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's ours, sometimes it's someone else's, but it's, usually it's a team team decision. It's not just me. And that's what I think has made it work, is just everybody thinking together.
Well, what are the two or three things that you guys as a team are really great at?
The hiring process we've done here is like, we don't have a ton of resources, right? So we're pretty scrappy with how we grew the company. As I said earlier, you know, we didn't have enough cash flow to hire anybody until we started pre-charging for a few months with clients who were happy with our services and trusted us. And that was a big game changing point for us. And then from there, we had to be really efficient with who we hired, you know, right out of college. Cause I think from what I hear from other business owners in California, it's like a lot of entitlement from younger kids coming out of college, a lot of, you know, people who don't want to work. And, you know, my dad tells me this every day, you know, I don't know why are you hiring people? You know, that's the worst. But it really it's, and he's, you know, worked in big companies, you know, growing up and doing that. And I think, you know, a lot of us are, we look away from managing a lot of people or having to deal with a lot of employees, and especially younger ones that I've talked to. And I can't emphasize enough how, you know, whether it's something we're doing or just lucky how we got a lot of great people here from San Diego, but it's those 22, 23 year olds we hired out of college. They've had a tremendous opportunity to start managing 8 or 10 other people, you know, at the age of 23, when the ones who stepped up and learned they don't have to be micromanaged and learned how to, you know, figure out and carve their own route through things, because we don't have a 6-week onboarding plan like Groupon did. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's kind of a, you know, here's a week, listen to our calls, figure it out. You know, if you need any help, let us know. And it's a different dynamic, right? But I think that really enabled a lot of people to grow up a little bit faster and manage their own team and run their own business in a lot of regards here. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's the hardest thing, is if you can enable an employee to think about the business like it's their own. We did that with 3 or 4 people here, and that was a big difference for us, of giving them, we set aside 15% of the company for equity for employees. Mm-hmm. And we started investing people and giving them the ability to run their own business here. And that's taken a lot of pressure off of us having to micromanage them as managers, and just kind of help being a helping hand a lot.
All right. So have you guys talked about core values for the company?
We have. That was another big one. I'm glad you brought that up. So about 20 people in, when we grew, we set up core values for the company. And that was, I think for us, if we did any earlier than that, we probably wouldn't have understood what those core values truly were. Because how we came up with them is all the managers sat in a room, about 8 of us, or no, at that time, there's probably 5 of us. And we literally wrote up the core values of people that we identified in the company that we loved the most and that we thought added the most value. And so we had a whiteboard of about, you know, 35 different things, or 40 different things. And we just kind of circled the ones that were similar. And we circled the same ones that came out in certain individuals. And then before you know it, we had a list of 5 or 6 things that really stood out to us in the company that we thought if we hired people around, they would fit in pretty well. And I think since we've done that, it's helped a lot.
So what are your core values?
Basically being humble, for sure. Thinking about, you know, others, and thinking about, you know, the people around you, but not forgetting, you know, your value as a person. You know, definitely, you know, thinking about it like it's your own business. Okay. I would say the other couple ones are very much structured around, you know, just caring for customers. That's a big one, of like, you know, taking yourself out of the me position and thinking about you. Mm-hmm. And having that forward facing, that's been huge. And then one of the other ones around, definitely like just thinking about your coworkers and how you add value to someone every day. And then thinking outside the status quo was my favorite one. I think that a lot of people here have, it's just, you know, don't think just because someone else says you have to do something this way, that is the way it needs to be done. And I think more than anything, we're very open to everybody doing things differently if there's a purpose behind it, and we can all grow from it and learn from them.
So you guys are more afraid of the status quo than you are of change.
Right. I think we open change with open arms, right? And that's something with, I think in today's internet world and social media world, things are changing so fast that if you're against change or not open to it, it's going to be tough to kind of pivot or adapt.
I find in the country today that there's this bifurcation between the people who are living the life you're talking about, which is what's next, what's new, how does it done better, faster? And there's another part of the country, which is we don't want to change.
Right.
And the ones who are caught in the middle, they are, seem to be resorting to things like opioids and, you know, distractors to just try to deal with this impossibility to make that switch. Well, no, all right. So you got core values. Now, do you have 100% of your people, right seat?
Do we have 100% of what?
100% of your people, right people, right seat.
I would say we do not. I would say we're still learning that a lot. We probably, I mean, maybe 50 to 60% of the people here are in the right seat. A lot of entry-level jobs, though, and those are allowing us to find the right seats as we grow. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the managers right now, the majority of them are in the right seat and they've earned it. I think they've stepped up. You know, they had to differentiate themselves to find that seat and create it. So that's helped a little bit with that. And then, you know, working as a team is probably our other core value that I think has enabled that a lot.
Because right people would be the people share your values. So you have that's the only way you get on board is sharing the values, right?
Right. Yeah. And that was something, you know, once the core values were established, you know, because not everybody fit into all the core values when we were hiring first, right?
Right.
So you know, it's not like we made a layoff of everybody who didn't, but it's interesting over the last year since we did it, how those people that were identified that weren't have kind of migrated themselves away from the rest of the team.
Well, you know? they either change, either change and develop, or they make themselves available to the industry.
Right. Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's essential. You got to have 100% of people, right seat to be the best.
Yeah, we have the right people now. It's I think creating more of the right seats for them to develop into, because I don't, you know, like as we discussed, no one wants to be in sales forever or like an entry level job. And
well, let me challenge you.
Yeah,
there are people who want to be in sales forever. That's their they love it.
Right.
They really love it. I know a fellow up in Thousand Oaks. Mm-hmm. He cold calls almost 300 people every day, and he loves it. He's highly successful. It's amazing.
That is amazing. I think it's we got to find more of those people, I guess, sometimes. But
means in your hiring, you're talking about your values, and then you're also saying, here are the five things that we want this seat, this box to fill. And we're looking for somebody who can fill these. Right. And one is they absolutely love cold calling, meeting new people, discussing, having great conversations, and they know how to close business. They know how to find out what the issues are. I mean, that's who we're looking for. Are you that kind of person? Oh, okay. Are you that kind of person? But let me promise you, they are out there.
So, you know, I think in that scenario, though, how many people will say, yeah, I'm that kind of person, hire me?
Oh, well, now, that's part of how you get clear about it. Because once you have the five things that this seat is supposed to produce, then they can say yes, but how are we going to measure it? You tell me, because the next thing I wanted to ask about was data. Right. And when you're working with somebody, if they say, I'm going to be doing these behaviors and they don't, well, in my experience, there's only two reasons they're not doing it. One is they don't want to. But if somebody comes and says to you, look, I love doing sales, and they come in and they don't, you hired the wrong person.
Right.
Right. But that doesn't mean they're not out there.
Very true.
And the same thing's true with software development or hardware development. I wrote user's guides for Toshiba for 4 years. Loved it. I really loved it. I wasn't that at it. Finally, the supervisor, the owner of the company who had the contract to do it, said, you're just making too many mistakes.
Yep.
Right? That was my issue. but I loved doing it. So it wasn't a matter of, I'm going to come in and put headphones on and drink tea and work all day and just wonderful. So there are people out there who love selling.
Yeah. It's interesting because there's people who, I mean, we've hired and again, like, you know, our average age, we just did the health insurance. So I know this, our average age of the company is 23 years old, which is pretty crazy. Right. And, and it's interesting that, you know, through that journey of finding those right seats, I don't think we ever hired for the right seat. Initially, we were just trying to get as many people as fast as we could at times, right? Sure.
Well, but so now, coming up with a way of doing that.
Right, no, for sure.
Now, if you're just getting this ready to sell it in 2 years, don't worry about it, right?
Right.
But if you want this to be a long term and you've got some 10-year targets out there that you want to hit,
right,
then it might be worthwhile to begin to find out, well, what is it that seat requires? What do we want from that seat?
Right.
And then who out there will fit?
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Right.
And no, totally. And it's been interesting though, is some of the seats and jobs that have been created from people, you know, I mean, someone on the sales team, it was very interesting. They sold, we didn't even do paid media or ads, media buying yet. And it was something we talked about, but he talked to a client about it. And I think he researched a little bit on his own and he sold someone on $5,000 on media buying. Right. Mm-hmm. And he was like, hey, Colton, he wants to do it. Can I run the campaign for him? Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because, you know, I said, yeah, why not? You know, the guy paid and he did it and he got him a 7X ROI on his $5,000 with that first campaign. And from that point forward, Grant basically started his own business with Unjumper and he started growing that whole team himself. And I let him focus 100% on paid media. Mm-hmm. And he found his own seat that he loved being in, you know, and that was.
And if you didn't, what would he have done?
He would have been unhappy and quit, right? Or
he
left.
He would have gone out to do it someplace else. He would have been looking
around.
Exactly. Well, who will let me do it?
Exactly.
Well, and that's what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. Is people who are, and you're going to create the opportunity for them to do what they're good at and they want to do, which over time means probably not 23, maybe, but probably not. As they spend time and gain some wisdom and experience, they will become great at it and they will love doing it.
Right.
And there are salespeople right now who are that. They love doing it and they're great at it.
Yeah. So, you know, right now we're kind of hiring, you know, the expectation that, okay, someone in customer service or sales, okay, they may be there for a year and then they're going to be either unhappy, expect to be moved somewhere or move up the ranking a little bit. You know, but it is kind of an entry level job. They're not making a ton of money to where, you know, they've got to grow somewhere. Right. But in your experience, you're saying pretty much you want to hire someone who's going to be happy forever in that seat
and make a ton of money
and make it and be able to grow and make a ton of money doing that exact same thing.
Right. That's gotcha. Right. Because then they can focus right on what they love doing that they're great at.
That makes sense.
Okay. Now, I appreciate startup hiring 23-year-olds and you know, this is just my observation. 23-year-olds are looking around, what do I want?
Right. They're all saying that.
And you're looking around for somebody who's not going to require a lot of resources. They'll come in and try some things. And if they fail, then they can move on. Or we'll try something else. All right? And that's okay when you are dedicated to a 10-year target and we want to be the best. Then you start putting the systems together that are going to bring you to be the best.
Any initial system off the top of your head here, you think that would help with that?
Well, we can talk a little bit about the entrepreneurial operating system. I don't know if you've heard about that.
I've not.
Well, that's what I do. And that for me, that's what I love doing. And my 16 clients can tell you whether I'm great at it or not, but I love it. And means I get to focus on that. And then, I mean, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I was trying to do LinkedIn and Facebook marketing for my business, but I don't do that anymore. I delegate that. You know, right. I delegate that to my LinkedIn guys in Toronto. Mm-hmm. He does it. I turn things over to my assistant as fast as I can so that I'm free to do only what I love doing and am great at. And then I find other people who love doing these things that I'm trying to delegate to and turn them off, you know, I mean, and to turn them over to them. So that we all wind up doing what we love doing and what we're great at.
And it took you a little while to figure out that's what you love to do and focus on.
It took conversation, and it took discovering people who would help me do that and who would hold me accountable for that, because I would always get into these shiny objects. Oh, you know, that 4 years ago, as soon as I got off this, I'd be out in investigating Instagram and thinking about how I could use it. Right now, if I thought about Instagram, I'd take my guy in Toronto and put him in touch with you and say, figure it out.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's part of putting that system together where you got the right values, you got the right people, you got data coming in that's telling you that you're making progress. Every issue that comes up, you're learning how to solve those issues immediately, not put them off forever. Every process in the company is documented and followed by all, so that when new people come in, you don't have to create new things. It's right there. And then finally, you got traction because you know what you're going to accomplish in the next quarter. Every time you've got the ability to simplify, predict, delegate, systemize, and structure all around where you want to go. So, sure, we can talk about that. All right, so tell me, Colton, we got a couple of minutes. What would you like to say to Southern California business people?
You know, I think the thing I've experienced the most benefit from being here in California and just running and trying to scale a business or get scrappy with it is giving first. I think that's where we're what's gotten us to where we are, is just not always asking for things from clients first and being very open-minded to, you know, giving a little bit first is open so many more doors than I ever expected. So if you're worried about how to get more leads or what to do, and I mean, I was just on the beach yesterday thinking about our creative team, and I saw a ton of families thinking about, you know, they're taking selfies and photos of themselves. And I was like, if I was starting a creative business, you know, and didn't have clients, I would be out here with a photo, with a camera, running up and down the beach, taking 100 families' photos with a card and saying, hey, I want to help out. Give me an email if you want me to send these to you.
Sure.
Guarantee you'd get two or three bookings for family portraits or who knows who owns a business there on the beach with their family that day, who appreciates the scrappiness, right?
Right.
And those people, I think it sets you apart, because when they see you going above and beyond and trying things and being forth willing with your skill set and being able to give first, they respect you a lot more and trust you a lot more.
Right.
And that's where I think the best business relationships that I have been created from.
Right. Well, that happens to be one of our core values is help first. Yeah. So we share that. Excellent. Well, Colton, this is wonderful. How would people get in touch with Jumper Media, get in touch with one of your super 23-year-old salespeople?
Yeah, you can go to the website, jumpermedia.co.co. We couldn't afford the M. So we finally got it, actually. We got to transition over, which we're holding off on for a little bit. But yeah, the website works great. And give us a call. We're happy to talk to you. Or if you want to find me on LinkedIn or Instagram, I'm happy to get in touch as well and happy to answer anything or connect with anybody who's interested.
Great. Wonderful. Well, thanks a lot for being with us. So there we are, another great company in Southern California doing business and thriving. So we look forward to this being with you again on the Pilgrim on the 405.
Thanks, Will.
You've been listening to the Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist.